I know we're all thrilled and encouraged by the response to the request for Brother Hobby this morning. What a gratifying response that was. There are things like this that happen all during the year. Those of you who are new to our company, there'll be opportunities like this through the year, not just in giving money, but other ways of service. And your beautiful service that you give in the singing cannot be expressed in words as far as the value of it. People go away from here, you know, they don't know what's said in the message, but they sure do appreciate that singing. And I can understand why. It's so inspiring and it's lifting up. It's edifying. You'll be singing songs all this year that you've not known probably before. And there'll be songs that will have as much to do with your spiritual growth as anything that will happen to you during this year. And then we'll sing those songs that are familiar to you. But all in all, it'll be a great experience of spiritual growth. So many things are on tap for this coming week. In the morning and Tuesday morning and Wednesday morning is a special orientation. It also continues Monday night and Tuesday night. The morning sessions are from 8 to 10. The evening sessions from 6 to 8. Terry Smith is in charge of directing it. And if you haven't met Terry Smith yet, you've got a real treat in store. Are you back yet, Terry? Where are you? They were supposed to... You are? Okay, good. Did you have a good meeting? Great. Huh? You struggled? Good on you. All right, that's fine. That'll be in the morning and Tuesday morning and Wednesday morning. So be here if you're willing to minister to others, to look out and to reach out and touch others in this great ministry that we have together. It's not going to be a lot of heavy stuff. It's going to be just simply plain practical application of Christian principles and Christian love. If you've not met Terry yet, you'll want to meet him and his wife. We're very thankful for their being with us. There's not another man, I guess, on earth that I would want to be here with us in this work but Terry and his good wife. Then next Sunday night, the meeting with Avon Malone begins. And if you want to hear some real preaching, you come to that meeting because he sure can do it. And you'll want him to go right on and not even stop. But it'll come to a conclusion next Friday night. But it begins this coming Sunday evening. Then tonight at 7:30 out at the Freeway Park, there'll be the freshman mixer skating party. I want you to meet me out there, and we'll just skate and skate and skate. And if you don't like to skate, they have some of these games, you know, that you play. Those, what do they call them? And come out and get to know each other better. We'll look for you to be there tonight at 7:30. If you need a ride, go to the American Heritage Center. If you have a car and you can take some riders, go to the American Heritage Center about 7:20 and pick up a carload and come on out to the Freeway Park, and we'll have us a real fine time of getting to know each other. We also need some upperclassmen who can skate and like to skate. We need you to serve more or less as hosts, so we'll be looking for you to come have a good time tonight. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. That's the reading of the first two verses of the first psalm. You know, one of the most beautiful and generous and kind gifts that God has given to human beings is the gift to be happy and ample opportunity to be happy. And on different levels of happiness. But God has given us the capacity to be happy to one degree or other. And the presence of such happiness in our lives proves to be a great equilibrium to our existence. Some people are satisfied in a very simple way. And we all ought to strive to be satisfied with simple things. As someone was reminded who was complaining of only having one pair of shoes, they were reminded, you know, after all, you can only wear one pair at a time. And then someone else said, yes, and what about the man who doesn't have any feet? But we have ample opportunity to be happy. Something in your life is that which makes you happy. We find that throughout the New Testament, throughout the Bible, throughout life, we're brought to the realization that God has given us the ability and the opportunity to be happy. He's not a respecter of persons. He's given these opportunities to every nation. Paul reminded the people at Antioch and Pisidia that God has not left himself without witness, but has done you good and given you from heaven rains and fruitful seasons, filling your hearts with food and gladness. And he also gives these blessings and these opportunities for happiness to the good and the evil alike. He causes his sun to rise on the evil and the good, sends his rain on the just and the unjust. So you find that it's a bountiful, bounteous, loving, generous God that continues to give us such good things. I don't know whether it's raining outside yet or not. Just before the first service, there came a very slight rain, enough, though, that you could smell it. You know, God could have, when it rained, made it smell awful. But he made it so that the ozones or whatever it is that we're smelling, when we smell a rain after a hot spell, you want to just stand there. Brother Welch, you know, out on your farm when it's been dry and a good rain comes, you just want to get out there in it and just smell of it. Well, God prepared us for those sensual things, the physical things even of our senses, so that might also bring us joy, might bring us happiness. And he's provided us with these capacities. I think that our ability to laugh is one of the evidences that God has given us a capacity for happiness. I don't know what makes people laugh. You laugh. You've laughed today. You probably will laugh tonight. We're just that way. Where is it located? Do you know? It's not your funny bone. You know, that's not too funny. That thing, that'll drive you up the wall if you ever hit it. That we call that our funny bone, but it's not all that funny. But where is our capacity to laugh? Jim, you and I laugh a lot together. Where is your capacity to laugh? You've got a good capacity to laugh. Where is it? Somebody or everybody has something about them, you know, that something touches them. If it's not anything more than somebody slipping on a banana peel, you know, and falling flat on their back, that's the funniest thing. See that? See, you laughed at that. Well, I don't know why we do it. We laugh at some things that we ought not to, but some of there are just so many things that are just plain downright funny. Well, I don't know who designed us that way, but I know that it also indicates that he's that kind of a God, that he also laughs and he enjoys things like that. We are made in his image, and I think that our ability to laugh is indicative of it. Human beings spend the majority of their time trying to be happy. Books have been written about it, books by the scores and the hundreds and probably the thousands on how to be happy. The atheist Robert Dale Owen had what he called his 12 laws of nature. They weren't anything more than simply a recipe on how to be happy. These soap operas that we listen to, that some people listen to, I don't watch them. But if you're not careful, you'll get hooked on them. There are a lot of kids on campus hooked on these soap operas. They drag you through a lot of misery, leading you in search of happiness. They don't ever get down to the happiness. It's always the misery they're in the middle of. But they're going in pursuit of happiness always. Well, that's the way we are. And you ought not to be condemned for it. I think many people ought to be pitied for not knowing where to look for happiness. But nobody ought to be condemned for wanting to be happy. That's as natural as breathing. And I can't do much of anything when I'm not reasonably happy. If my home isn't right, I can't work. I say essentially to the elders, you'll have to hang it up till I get back and get my home right so I can be happy and do my work. You're the same way. If things aren't right in your innermost being where you can be reasonably happy and things are pretty well stabilized there, you can't do anything on a test. You can't do much studying. You can't do much of anything until you get yourself back to your equal balance, till you get your equilibrium back. We're all like that. And many people spend so much of their time spinning their wheels and going in circles, not knowing where to find happiness. The materialist thinks that in each purchase, he'll find happiness as he acquires more and more things. And he keeps giving himself to spending more things on himself. The sensualist thinks that each conquest or that each affair will bring him happiness, but it doesn't. And then there's the druggist, the one who burns his mind up with drugs. He's doing that thinking that it's going to produce happiness, and he keeps reaching for a new high. Or the person who drinks alcohol, he keeps reaching for a new sensation, a new high, and it takes more and more of it to produce the same high as it was produced before on less of it. But all of this, you see, represents people reaching for this equilibrium of the soul. And they're to be pitied who go that route. But the very desire for it itself is not bad. It's natural. I'm involved in it. You're involved in it. And the writer that we're going to consider tonight knew a thousand or thousands of years ago where the secret of happiness really is, and he tells us about it. His son Solomon, having indulged his whole body constantly and continually and almost without limit in the attempt to satisfy his soul, he indulged his body, but he came to the end of it and said, "Vanity of vanities, all is vanity and vexation of spirit." The vanity there represents emptiness and nothingness. Vexation of spirit, though, is when vanity gets up off the ground and starts assaulting you. When vanity gets up and emptiness gets up, and this emptiness and nothingness gets up and starts poking fun at you and punching you in the ribs and saying, "Aha, it's not here, is it?" That's vexation, when your spirit becomes tormented by the absolute nothingness that these things have produced in your life. That becomes vexation. It becomes a torment. And that's what happens in the lives of so many people. But so many thousands of years ago, the father of Solomon gave us this very simple recipe on how to be happy. And I'm going to tell you about it tonight. And the reason why I've chosen to talk to you about it tonight is because at the beginning of this year, again, I think you need to know how to be happy. David, the psalmist, said, "Happy is the man that walks not in the counsel of the wicked." Happy is the young man or the young woman that doesn't go around taking advice from evil people. Happy is the young man or young woman that doesn't let his attitude or his outlook or his mindset be determined by the counsel that comes from wicked people. Now, David bears testimony and says the happy person will not let the wicked man determine his attitude or his frame of mind or his outlook or his mindset. Let me give you an illustration of it. One of David's own boys. David had a son whose name was Amnon. And in this young man's life, we see a refusal to accept his father's advice. Amnon, by the way, was probably the nearest thing that we could come to a preacher's son in the Old Testament. That's right. Or an elder's son. Or a Bible teacher's son. Or a Christian's son. Someone raised in a Christian atmosphere. Though there weren't any Christians back in the Old Testament, David was a man after God's own heart. And this young man, no doubt, had heard or seen his father's sermon on the first psalm. Perhaps he had heard his father sing this psalm, or had heard his father recite this psalm, "Happy is the man that doesn't walk in the counsel of the wicked." But this young man hadn't heard him. He hadn't heard what his father said. And I just wonder how many of you today who have come from the homes of preachers and the homes of elders and deacons and Bible teachers and Christian mothers and fathers, how many of you have heard them say these things, but you didn't take any heed to them? You didn't really listen. Or they just, you know, they're old fogey. You don't really know where the action is, so they just didn't listen. Amnon didn't listen. Here's the story, and it's a tragic thing. There were several main characters: Amnon, Jonadab, Absalom, Tamar. These are the main characters in this tragedy, this drama. This man, Jonadab, was what the Bible calls a crafty man. Amnon was a fool. That's all you can say about him. Tamar is described as being very beautiful. Absalom was defined here as being a very vengeful person. But the story goes like this. Amnon became infatuated with his half-sister. Oh, really, I'm not sure what all the relationship was. Amnon and Absalom were half-brothers. And Absalom had a sister whose name was this Tamar, and Amnon became infatuated with her. It really wasn't love. This man Amnon didn't have the capacity to really love. All he had the capacity to do was lust. And so he became infatuated with her to the point that it says he made himself sick. And the scripture says that he made himself sick. She didn't make him sick. He made himself sick by reveling in this self-pity, by reveling and wallowing in this lust. And he saw her day after day, and he got to the place where, incidentally, I imagine he couldn't even eat. The Bible says that he, morning after morning, would come in looking so dejected and so absolutely wretched. And Jonadab saw him one day, and he said, "Man, what's the matter with you? Why are you looking so terrible morning after morning?" He said, "Come on, why don't you tell me about it?" So he pulled the young boy aside, and Amnon said, "Well, it's my sister Tamar." He said, I'm so in love with her that I can't think about anything else, but she's a virgin, and I just don't feel like that I can do anything to her." And Jonadab said, "Wait a minute, just a minute. I've got it all worked out." He said, "You play like you're sick. And then lie down on your bed and call for your father. And when he comes to see what's wrong with you, you tell him that really you're just kind of ill, but about all you need is for Tamar, your sister, to come and prepare some cakes in your sight and then come in and feed you from her hand, and that'll be about all it'll take, and you'll be all right. And that young man took that wicked man's advice. He went home, got in the bed, played like he was sick, his father David came and said, "What's the matter with you?" He gave him this story, and David went out and sent Tamar in to fix him a meal. She came in and fixed his bread there and brought it into his place where he was lying on the bed. And then he said, "Get everybody out of here, clear out, everybody's to go." And then he took this young girl and forced her. She begged him, "Please don't." She said, "If you'll just ask my father, he'll give me to you. Don't do this thing. It ought not to be done in Israel." But this wretched, miserable cur, it said, being stronger than she, he forced her, and he lay with her. You know, that ought to really have cured him. It should have been exactly what he wanted. That's what he was after. But listen to what it says. After he had committed this sin with her, then it says, "Then Amnon hated her with very great hatred, so that the hatred with which he hated her was greater than the love with which he loved her. And Amnon said to her, 'Get up and get out of here.' But she said, 'No, my brother, for this wrong in sending me away is greater than the other which you did to me.' But he wouldn't listen to her. He called the young man who served him and said, 'Put this woman out of my presence,' and bolt the door after her." And this poor, sweet child, one of the virgins in Israel, having been robbed of that virtue, put dust upon her head, tore her clothing, and went home to her brother Absalom. He said, "You've been with Amnon, haven't you?" She said, "Yes." He said, "Don't say a word. Just keep quiet." Months later, Absalom asked for his father to allow Amnon to go with him for a sheep shearing and enjoy the feast. And Absalom had already programmed his servants. He said, "During the middle of the feast, when Amnon is drunk, kill him." And they fell on him with a sword and cut him to pieces. Not only did this advice from the wicked Jonadab not satisfy the boy, he hated her with a hatred greater than the love with which he had loved her. But not only did it not satisfy him, it cost him his life. Cost him his life. Just one single advice from a wicked person cost this young man his life. If Amnon could come up tonight and you could say, "Amnon, tell us something about, give these young people some advice," I think he'd say to you young people, "Stay away from the advice of wicked people. I lost my life listening to a wicked man. Don't you do that." And yet, you know what happens? Every year, just one single bit of advice from wicked people caused certain ones of our students to go off on a binge, to go off on a tangent, to lose their scholastic standing, to be deprived of graduation. Now you watch it, it'll happen again this year. Toward graduation night, the night before graduation, some Jonadab will come along to a group of young boys and say, "Come on, let's go get drunk, or let's go get on some drugs. Let's go to Little Rock and we'll do this, that, or the other." And sure enough, some of these Jonadabs will do that, and some of the Amnons will follow right along, and they'll be deprived of graduating. Just one mistake. You mean they hadn't done like that all year? No. No, that's not the way they lived. This was just something that they wanted, that somebody said, "Why don't you do this?" And so that's what they did. And every year it seems to happen like that. What a shame. You know, I wonder what Amnon would say if he were to be able to look at some of the books and magazines you all have been reading this summer. I wonder what he would say if he were to look at some of the movies you've been watching this summer. And not only that, some of the things, the books and the magazines and the movies that you'll be watching this year, or you can find them there in Little Rock. If you want an X-rated movie or an R-rated movie, you can find them in Little Rock. And when people say, "Why don't you go with us?" I wonder what Amnon would say, having known, what had happened to him. What would he say if he were to watch how you all, many of you, will go there and will find your release in these things? But Amnon would say to you, "Judging from what I see of the magazines you're reading and the movies you're watching, young man, you're not going to make it. Young lady, you've had it. You're not going to make it. You're letting them create images." You see, that's all that Jonadab did. He created an image, a verbal image, a mental image by words. He had this boy lying in his bed. He had this beautiful young lady there preparing the food. He prepared in the boy's mind all of this whole plot. He had it all worked out. And the boy then simply implemented, he put into action what had been planted in his mind. That's all he did. And when you read, whether it's pornography or whether it's just subtle, sensual, lusty magazines or see sensual, suggestive movies, all they're doing, they're putting you in a bed and they're putting this beautiful woman there and they're creating this scene. And then the natural outcome of that is that you will act out what you see. And Amnon would say, don't do that. You're committing suicide. Just simply don't do it. Now let me ask you a question. Who will you listen to this year? There's ample evidence on both sides. There's ample advice from both camps. If you think that you've come here and there's just Christians here on this campus or just Christians in this community, you've got another thing coming. There's every kind and shape, form, and fashion of people in this campus. And if you think that there's just Christians here, you're in for a very sobering, saddening realization and an awakening. There are people here who will give you advice that's just as rotten as the day is long. And if you listen to them, you're going to get in trouble. Happy is the man that doesn't walk in the counsel of the wicked. Many of you have come out, I say some of you, I don't know how many, but some of you have come out of a drug culture. You know what's going to happen one day before this year is over? You're going to get very depressed. You're going to come to the time when there's a test and you can't make it. All these things and the pressures are going to begin to bear down on you and you're going to be very depressed. And watch my word, there'll come along that day a Jonadab. And he'll say to you, I've got something for you. It'll make you feel better. Come on with me. There's a bunch of us going out tonight, and we'll just kind of let it all hang out. We're going to blow our minds. Come on and go with us. Don't listen to him, young people. Don't listen to him. Don't listen to that young man with his flashy car as he comes on the campus, you know, and as he's playing it cool. Don't listen to him, girls. He said, come on and go. Let's go to Little Rock. We're going to have a good time. Jonadab wants you to go. Amnon would say, listen, don't you listen to that man. I lost my life over it. And you can just multiply it over and over and over again. Don't listen to the wicked man. But you have that opportunity. You'll have to make a decision. But there's a second negative part of this recipe. He said, blessed is the man that doesn't stand around where sinners stand around. It says stand in the way of sinners here. But he's not talking about hindering sinners, standing in their way like that. He's talking about don't stand around where sinners stand around. A rooster crowed one morning early, and a great big old burly husky fisherman turned and walked out and cried his heart out. Simon Peter, who had just denied the very best friend he ever had. And when Jesus turned and looked at him, Peter's heart was cut through with this sword. And he went out and cried his heart out because he had betrayed his Lord. Wonder why he did it. I don't know all the issues, don't know all the answers. But I do know one thing. Simon Peter was standing around people that he ought not to have been standing around. The gospel account says that he was standing around the fire built by the soldiers who were going to crucify Jesus. He was standing around warming himself with those people who were diametrically opposed to what Simon Peter was supposed to have been doing and where he was supposed to have been heading. And he was standing around warming himself by their fire. But you could say, well, look, it was cold outside. And it's not good to be cold. And that's right. Nobody likes to be out in the cold, physically, emotionally, or whatever, socially. We just don't like to be out in the cold. We like to be on the inside. We like to be around the fire of companionship. We like that circle of friendship. And may I beg those of you who are standing for the right, those of you who are sensitive to what's good, may I beg you to reach out to these newcomers and get down there and get with them and form friendships with them. Provide them with this social function. Provide them with this social association. Because if you don't, you know who will? Somebody else will. Someone who doesn't give a hang about whether anything is right or not. They don't care what's right or wrong. They're just trying to make it through the night. And if you don't help bring these people into your circle of friendships, then someone who doesn't care one thing about them will bring them in and will provide them the wrong kind of company. Simon Peter's not the last young man that sinned because he stayed around the wrong company. How many mothers and fathers have come to me crying and distraught over the fact that their son or daughter went wrong here? And they've told me, well, he just started hanging around with the wrong crowd. Hanging around with the wrong crowd. What was wrong with him? Well, he just started running around with the wrong crowd. It's better to be left out in the cold, young people, than to warm yourself around the fire of people who are going the opposite direction from you. Who will be your friends this year? They're every kind on campus. This first thing about walking in the counsel of the wicked, that implies that you know that it's not your everyday thing, but that you're besieged by wicked advice. But this second thing here talks about standing around where sinners stand around. It's developed to the point that you've made these people your acquaintances. You've made them your friends. What kind of people will you gravitate toward this year? I'll guarantee you that there's every class of people in the world on this campus. If you don't believe it, just watch. You'll see them. And you'll know them, you'll recognize them, because if you're not careful, you'll gravitate to that exactly what you are. You'll find your own unless you make up your mind, I'm not going to live like that any longer. Water finds its own level. And unless you make dead sure that you're not going to live like you've been living, you're going to find yourself running around with the same kind of people on this campus that you've run around with all your life that have led to your downfall. You can find them here. But you won't be happy in it. Happy is the young man that doesn't stand around where sinners stand around. If Simon Peter could be brought back up here tonight, and you could ask him, Simon, say something to all these young people here who are going to be in school this year. You know what I think he would say? I think that would flash back into his mind that moment when he did the worst thing that he ever did. If you could say, Simon, what was the worst thing you ever did? I'm sure he would say it was the night I denied my Lord. And you could say, well, Simon, give them some kind of advice. I think he might very well say, young people, don't hang around people that you ought not to be hanging around. Make sure that your associations are what they ought to be, because evil companionships still corrupt good morals. Then there's a third negative thing. Nor sits in the seat of scoffers. Happy is the young man or the young woman that doesn't sit in the seat of a scoffer. Do words convey any visual pictures to you? They do to me. The word rail, when I talk about, you know, think about the word railing on somebody or railing, I think about somebody banging on a door, scratching on it, and banging and screaming. That, to me, is what flashes in my mind when I think about the word railing. You may think I need to be carried off somewhere after. The word lavish in the New Testament, you know that God has lavished upon us? That's whipped cream to me. I just think of all this whipped cream all over this. That's lavish. This word here, scoffer, you know what it means? Scoffer to me conveys absolute nothingness, absolute negative emptiness, scoffing. Ah, you don't want to go there. Ah, he's not any Bible teacher. Oh, there's nothing in that. Oh, there's nothing there. Oh, this school isn't all it's cracked up to be. Oh, this and all that. That's scoffing. They don't have any alternative. They don't have a better plan. All they can do is stand around and tear down what other people have spent 50 years to build up. That's scoffing. And I'll tell you what, you can tear down in an hour what has taken 3 months to build up. Those of you who build houses, it takes a long time to build a house. You can call a man in there with a crane and a destructive iconoclastic destruction bar, whatever they call it, an impact bar or ball, and in no time, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you can destroy and level what it took someone months and months to build. And that's the way a scoffer is, making always light of that which is holy, looking off and looking down upon and throwing off on and casting aspersions on things that are really and truly great. That's a scoffer. And there are going to be people get to you like that. Atheists are scoffers. I've seen atheists. I've watched them debate. I've read their books. I've never seen a happy one yet. But you probably won't be confronted by an atheist. You're going to be confronted by other people who are scoffers. Let me show you where they're going to hit you first. This may surprise you, but this is where it's coming. They're going to hit you next Sunday morning at 9:45. They're going to get you about 9:30, and they're going to say to you, now look, you're away from home now. There's no use to go to Sunday school this morning. That's kid stuff. Go on, don't worry about that. Now's your time to assert your freedom. Why go to Sunday school? And about 1,000 of you won't. You won't go. That's right. I suspect that there's a fight. May be wrong on this, but I suspect that a whole lot of you don't go to Sunday school because some scoffer kept you from it. Now listen, you can't sit in the seat of a scoffer really until you've sat at the feet of a scoffer. Somebody will have to lead you probably into it. Or it may not be a physical person, but somehow or other, somebody's going to get to you and say, look, that's kind of sissy stuff, isn't it? Some years ago, there were two boys, and one of them was a well-known preacher, and in this town, he was asked to come out to the prison to speak to a group of prisoners. And when he went out to speak to them, one of the prisoners got up and introduced him. And he said there were two small boys in this town, and both of them went to the same school. They had the same friends. They went to the same amusement parks. They played on the same football team. They had the same friends. They went to the same Sunday school. But one of the boys, he said, thought that was sissy stuff when he grew up, and so thought it was for old ladies and sissies, and he decided he'd quit. The other boy, though, decided he would continue, and he kept on going to Sunday school because he felt that there was something in it for his life. And this prisoner then concluded his introduction by saying, "The boy that dropped out of Sunday school is now introducing the boy that didn't." What a graphic illustration. Blessed are those that do not sit in the seat of scoffers. So you have this progression of sin. Do you notice it? Walking, standing, sitting. That wasn't just by chance. Blessed is the man that doesn't walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stand around where sinners stand around, nor sit in the seat of scoffers. That's sin's progression. You don't just go in and flop down first thing. No, you walk by it. You walk by it. And then you stop and stand around. And then you sit down. Be careful. Blessed is the young man or young woman that doesn't walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stand around where sinners stand around, nor sit in the seat of scoffers. Then there's just one simple, positive part of this recipe. But his delight, that is the happy man, his delight is in the law of the Lord. And on his law he meditates day and night. Now that's the happy person. What about it? This is where he gets his kicks. This is where he really enjoys, this is what he really enjoys doing. He can hardly wait to get there. Like David said, as a hart or as a deer pants after water, so my soul pants after thee, O God. He just couldn't wait to get to his Father's presence. And as we sang the song tonight, "Oh, how love I thy law. It is my meditation all the day. How shall a young man keep his way?" And then he goes on to talk about all the advantages of the Word of God in the life of a young man or a young woman. Psalms 19, "With my whole heart I seek thee. Let me not wander from thy commandments. I've laid up thy word in my heart that I might not sin against thee. Blessed be thou, O Lord. Teach me thy statutes. With my lips I declare all the ordinances of thy mouth. In the way of thy testimonies I delight as much as in all riches. I will meditate on thy precepts and fix my eyes on thy ways. I will delight in thy statutes. I'll not forget thy word." That's the happy man. The man, he says, is happy who delights in the law of the Lord, and on that law he meditates day and night. Now let me bring it down to you in Monday language. You know the one ingredient that's going to make the difference between your being happy this year and fruitful and fulfilled? The one ingredient, here it is, that you find yourself a quiet time during the day. Get that quiet time established in your schedule. It doesn't have to be more than 10 or 15 minutes. But you've got to get aside, away from the hubbub and the rush of the day, to where you can get alone with your Lord and get in there in His Word and just let Him wrap you around like a mama wraps her baby in a blanket and just cuddle up there and learn to love the Lord through His Word. You've got to have it, young people. You won't make it otherwise. Oh, you can subsist and you can drag along and you can perhaps survive and come out anemic, but you're not going to be happy. You're going to be happy if you get into that Word every day. I don't mean something for a test. Man alive, not that. Mm-mm. I'm talking about apart from the test, apart from Sunday school, apart from what you get here. I'm talking about something that you get on your own. Something that you get because you and God have got something going between you and Him alone. Not with your schoolmate, not with your roommate. I'm talking about something that you and God have got going to where you just simply can't wait to get aside to read that word from your Lord. There's the happy person. And I guarantee you it'll work. These three negatives and this one simple positive on how to be happy this year. Happy is the young man or young woman that doesn't walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stand around where sinners stand around, nor sit in the seat of scoffers, but his delight or her delight is in the law of the Lord, and on that law he meditates day and night. There it is. At the end of this year, you're not going to be any bigger. You're not going to be any more than what you've eaten. What do you weigh, about 120? She's ignoring me. You weigh about 340? .480, all right, whatever. The point I'm making is you don't weigh 1 ounce more than what you've eaten. You know that? Not an ounce. Not 1 ounce. At the end of this year, spiritually, you're not going to weigh 1 ounce more than you've eaten this year. Not an ounce. That's right. So it's up to you. May God bless you tonight. I couldn't think of anything better than to talk to you on this simple recipe for happiness. Would you like to start off now, tonight, on the right foot? Let's get going right. This is going to be the best year, I believe, that we've ever had. And you're going to be a part of it if you'll get in there where the action is. And this is where it's at. May God bless you. If you're here tonight and you need some help or encouragement, come forward or stay right where you are and tell somebody beside you. Or if you'd like to become a Christian, come and say that. We'll take your confession, immerse you in water into Jesus Christ. Or if you want to place membership with this congregation, whatever maybe you desire, let's get off right now to a good start while we stand and sing.